designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show is hosted by Felicia King of Quality Plus Consulting and airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.
Good morning. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, and I'm Felicia King. Today's show is going to be about two real-world examples of how bad things can happen and how you could prevent them from happening to you. I think longtime listeners of the show know how I love to use real-world examples, things that we have seen specifically firsthand, and utilize those very instructively along with advice on saying, okay, this is how you could prevent this from happening to you. So that's what today's show is going to be about. I'm going to start first with a topic about this ransomware aspect and how it can actually destroy everything that you have in the cloud if you do not have the right protections for your cloud things in place. And you'll find that this is actually going to be related to the real-world example that I tell you about. So there's a gentleman by the name of Kevin Mitnick, who is a white hat hacker, very, very well known in the IT security community. And he happens to currently be the chief hacking officer for a company called KnowBe4. And KnowBe4 is really big in the anti-phishing, anti-business email compromise business. And KnowBe4 they have a product that's kind of a competitor to WatchGuard's DNS Watch. And I think I talked about on the show about the Verizon stuff that the independent security labs have evaluated the DNS filtration space products. And so far, the conclusion that they've come to is that WatchGuard's DNS Watch product is actually the best right now. And that's cool. And I've certainly been very happy with that product, been using it as, I think, even when it was in its beta phases, I was using it and was very, very happy with it. And based upon feedback from myself and other engineers, they've actually improved that product. So anybody who wants to protect their organization from business email compromise and phishing scams really should have a WatchGuard Firebox with the Total Security Suite. Now, that is not in totality the protective mitigation factor. We've talked before about the cybersecurity kill chain. This is actually a concept that Lockheed Martin came up with, and they were building upon the NIST SP800 security protocol set. And the cybersecurity kill chain, in short, is really this approach that says you're going to have defense in depth, not only on the ingress side, meaning things coming into your organization, but also on the egress side, things leaving your organization. So if we think about this in the context of business email compromise, somebody sends you an email, you really want to have many ways in which that person viewing that email is going to be protected from the malicious content inside that email. So let's talk about that a little bit. In my world, where we use Trend Micro Cloud App Security, we use secure email systems, we use appropriate endpoint protection agents, and we use a properly programmed security appliance, the network layer. That email is first going to be getting scanned by Trend Micro Cloud App Security. And more likely than not, and I mean really with a 99% efficacy, that email is just going to get whacked by TCAS. It is just going to get whacked right there. And if you have your TCAS configured correctly, then what happens is that email will get quarantined. The end user, meaning the recipient of the email, will be notified that that was quarantined. And then they have some information there that helps them be able to determine whether or not they want to release that from the quarantine. Okay. So let's say it actually, that email gets through TCAS, which is highly unlikely to begin with. But let's say it does. Then what you want is to have protection at the network layer, at the DNS layer, and also at the endpoint layer in order to prevent business email compromise, phishing, and hacking attacks like that from being able to complete, right? Come to fruition. So let's say this email gets delivered into this person's mailbox and they see this email and it looks pretty crafty, right? It looks, as far as they're concerned, it looks like a legitimate email. And, you know, it might actually be a legitimate email, but it still might actually have a URL in the email that is a completely compromised source. Oh, that's an interesting one. Yeah, it's, let's say it is actually a legitimate email, but it contains a URL to a hacked source. Okay. So now, if you click on that, then one of your network layer protections should protect you from that. Either the DNS watch component, content like APT blocker, content like web blocker, reputation enabled defense, or your Trend Micro business, worry-free business security services agent, which is going to have its own levels of those types of protections. So if you have these three components in place, you're pretty much immune to the bad doo-doo that could be out there. I mean, I really have yet to see an example where someone with an appropriate layered defense in depth strategy is getting it, you know, that junk is getting through. It just doesn't get through that many layers of protection. And that's why you have these layers of protection. And you may be thinking, oh, well, that's expensive. Actually, it's not. I do this all the time for single user residential scenarios. So it can be done cost effectively for one person in a residential scenario. So therefore, if it's cost effective for one person, then it clearly is even more cost effective for a business because they get more economies of scale out of that. All right. So Kevin Mitnick did this scenario where he basically said, look, I can send an email and the person goes and clicks on this email and this email creates this link that they click on creates an OAuth token, which then creates a completely separate authentication mechanism into their cloud account. So we could be talking about G Suite, we could be talking about Office 365, or really frankly anything else. So if a person receives a business email compromise scam and is able to successfully click on the link, then whether or not they have multi-factor authentication ends up becoming irrelevant at that point. Now, that is some real scary poo-poo because, you know, MFA, multi-factor authentication, is so very effective. However, if you don't have these other layers of protection in place, and then you have an end user that actually clicks on the link and then says, well, yeah, that's right, go ahead and grant access to my mailbox, okay? Then what we have is a situation where an OAuth token has been generated, and now this remote application, I might add, a completely remote application. We're now talking about something that isn't even going through your network. It's not going through their PC. So once this has been granted access, horrifying things happen at that point. And he literally did a demonstration of how ransomware on the fly now has direct access to all the content in your cloud account. Now, I'm going to go back to the whole TCAS concept here as well, because TCAS has protections in place such that it will see this activity sitting inside of your mailbox, and it will actually prevent those ransomware actions from going. But, you know, I already talked to you through all of these components that could have prevented that malicious link from ever being clicked on. And I don't discount the value of end user education. I mean, I think that the human brain itself is a very important component of a security strategy that says, nah, I don't think I'm going to click on that link. So end user education is extremely valuable. However, I'm also not delusional to the point where I think that every person can be educated to have the level of savviness required to just avoid these issues without any other technological advantages. So to expect end users to not click on links and that you can somehow educate all of them to do that successfully all of the time, that is absolutely very naive to think that that can be achieved. And I've seen that that just, it doesn't happen. I've seen a lot of people click on a lot of links they shouldn't have clicked on. And the outcome then is delineated based upon what other technological components you have in place. So going back to this whole ransomwaring your entire mailbox and your OneDrive and frankly anything else that that malicious process got granted access to, we now have to ask the question, do you have full backups of your cloud content? And I can tell you that pretty much if we look at every educational institution in the country that is using G Suite, which is Google, they first off don't have any security protections on G Suite because nobody's buying TCAS for G Suite because they, you know, they're like, oh, we don't need that. Mm-hmm. Right. And says the individual who almost ransomwared an entire university because he uploaded a file into his Google Drive and the university had absolutely no protections for that whatsoever because they didn't have TCAS. Of course, if they would just buy TCAS, that problem would be solved. So they think that having this stuff, quote, and I'm going to air quote, the cloud, by having this stuff in the cloud, this somehow is a backup. It's not a backup. And they sometimes think, I think many people oftentimes think that, well, the cloud is secure. No, the cloud is only as secure as you make it. Okay. In fact, there's an awful lot of argumentation to prove that the cloud is more insecure than things that are on-premise. Because things that are on-premise are actually easier to secure. So I'm not saying that the cloud inherently is insecure. I'm saying that the cloud is inherently more difficult to secure. So it can be secured, absolutely. But you have to go to more effort to do it. So this fundamentally begs the question, who's setting up your cloud components? Do they have adequate protections in place, such as TCAS, such as multi-factor authentication? So if you have this content in your cloud accounts, let's say your OneDrive, and you've got cloud-hosted email, do you actually have a backup of that content? Have you backed it up in some other way? Do you have regular backups of that? And if you can't say yes to those questions, then you have a severe gap in, you know, your strategy. So this demo that Kevin Mitnick did is he showed how this ransomware could just on the fly through the cloud access, completely remote. Once that OAuth token was generated, it wouldn't even matter. Here's the kicker. It wouldn't even matter if you changed your password because you had generated an independent OAuth token. Oh, yeah. So that's pretty scary, horrifying stuff right there. This is just more demonstrable evidence as to why it is that you have to have the cybersecurity kill chain. Now, let's take the second half of the show here and talk about this real-world example that I saw in the last 10 days, which was literally the Shalom Center here in Kenosha. Their website is being categorized as, and I'm going to read it to you verbatim as it says, it's being categorized as verified fraudulent page or threat source. So pretty much it's confirmed that that website has been categorized, it's been inventoried and categorized as hosting malware. Again, verified fraudulent page or threat source listed as XXX dangerous, not XXX pornography, but XXX dangerous, okay? And a website does not get categorized as that unless it's actually been hacked and is actively serving up malware. Now, the timelines of this are not entirely clear, but I can say that it was categorized as that based upon inventory processes that are not they're not light inventory processes. They're processes whereby websites are scanned and inventoried and categorized, and they are, it's a pretty vigorous process. And this is done in order to ensure that there are not false positives. So we know that this process did not false positive categorize the Shalom Center's website as that. So I take that then to, you know, I extrapolate that into this concept of, well, clearly whoever is managing the Shalom Center's website is not qualified to do so, because I genuinely don't think that it is hard to keep a website from being hacked anymore. It's just not hard. You do have to be a security expert and know what you're doing with it. And fundamentally, there are a lot of platforms out there for websites that technically cannot be secured appropriately. WordPress happens to be one of them. And that's not my opinion exclusively. That happens to be the opinion of many super, super high-end, internationally known website security experts, that WordPress is not a platform that can actually be secured. So now let's extrapolate this into what happens when your website URL is hacked like this and it's being categorized as a verified fraudulent page or threat source. Now imagine that you work there and you're sending emails, and in your email signature line happens to be the URL to the website. Now, any security system is going to look at this and say, whoa, I think there's something malicious embedded inside this email. Therefore, I'm going to quarantine the entire email. Now, let's say your recipient of the email sees this. They pull this email out of quarantine. And then they go and try and click on the Shalom Center website link that's embedded in the email. Well, again, if this person has appropriate security on their system, what will happen is that their endpoint protection agent will literally block access to that website and will describe why. Additionally, if that mechanism doesn't work, then web content filtration at the perimeter security appliance layer would have also handled that. So here's another interesting, this is all real world. I saw this with my own eyes in real time. So the other outcome of this, another thing to think about with this is, now let's say there's any content out there that has this URL in it that, and again, this URL is the Shalom Center's website, which has been categorized as dangerous, verified, fraudulent page or threat source. When you have appropriate security inspection of content inside of SharePoint, OneDrive, and your email, so all of your Office 365 content, and you can extrapolate this into G Suite as well, and also Dropbox for Business, I might add, because if you have TCAS, you get all of those protections across all of those platforms. So it doesn't matter if that content was generated 5 years ago or 5 minutes ago. The fact is, now you have this content on your system. This content is now being seen, whether it's a Word document, an Excel spreadsheet, an email, a PowerPoint presentation, I don't really care what it is. It could just be a text file, frankly. As long as it has the URL to the Shalom Center website in it, and the Shalom Center website has been categorized as dangerous, verified, fraudulent page or threat source, then all of that content will be quarantined in order to prevent an end user from accessing it. So, number one, It is crucially important that you do not let your website get hacked. That is number one. Because once your website gets hacked, even if you hire somebody to clean it up, if it was categorized like that, how in the world do you get it uncategorized? I mean, how do you get it uncategorized? Are you going to literally call every manufacturer of every security protection product on the planet and lobby them to get your website unblocked? How much time would that take? And is it even possible? I would argue that that might not even be a possible process. And I am speaking from experience when I say this, because anybody who's ever had to deal with a blacklisted IP address that has gone into a spam black hole list. So there's blacklists and black hole lists in terms of mail servers and their IP addresses. All right, so if you were to, and this has actually happened to some clients of mine, let's say they buy a new internet connection and it comes with a set of IP addresses. These IP addresses, we end up finding out, are on a spam black hole list. Now, it's on that spam black hole list having nothing to do with anything with my client, because they just got these IP addresses from the ISP. But now I have to deal with this. So whoever had those IP addresses before was incompetently running their mail system, which then is why it got on the spam black hole list. So trying to get a set of IP addresses off of the spam black hole list is extremely difficult and extremely time consuming, and you may never actually win that battle. You can make that same argument for what happens if your website gets hacked and then it stays hacked for long enough for the website to get categorized across all the security platforms as being a verified fraudulent page or threat source. So now, because of the mismanagement of the website, this now extrapolates into something that is very damaging to the organization, in that all of their content that they've ever sent, or the people have ever sent them, that includes that URL, is going to be quarantined. And this means that you may not even be able to communicate with people you want to email anymore. Like, you'd have to take the URL out of your email signature in order to just get people to receive the emails. And now, take this one step further and ask yourself the question, how is it that this problem went on for that long? Because we know it went on for, at least a month, if not longer. So how is it that it went on that long? Why didn't people internal to the organization find out about this proactively or effectively in real time with their own systems? Well, the only conclusion you can come to logically is that their own computer systems have none of these protections. So they don't have protection at the email layer that would have quarantined it. They don't have protection at the file layer that would have quarantined it. They don't have protection at the endpoint security layer that would have shown them how their website was hacked and categorized. They also don't have protection at the network security layer that would have, again, shown them that their website was hacked. So I can only extrapolate that to one logical conclusion, which is they basically have grossly inadequate security. And what they're going to do about that, well, you know, that's up to them, right? But this is a real world example, and we can all learn from it. And I can tell you irrefutably that the mechanisms that I described to you provided 100% efficacy in terms of trapping that content that contained the verified fraudulent page or threat source, and prevented a hack attack being perpetrated by accessing that website as a result. So if you can, here's a, you know, I don't know if it's still actively going on right now. Oh, do let me check. But it would be funny to see if you could test this on your own PC. Yeah, my PC is still not able to get at it as of right now. So I would suggest you might want to try accessing the Shalom Center website yourself and find out if you can get there or not. Now, if you can get there, then that would suggest you have inadequate security. If you can't get there, well, then kudos to you, because then you do have security that would have protected you from accessing, you know, intentionally or unintentionally, a verified fraudulent page or threat source. So this was a great real-world example, something to learn from. And again, I want to stress that it's just not that hard to have good security. You just have to try. So I'm going to wrap up the show with a resource for business owners that I think is very, very relevant right now, which is a free privacypolicy.com site, which I thought was actually a pretty interesting and good resource. With GDPR coming out on May 25th, 2018, there has been this necessity for everyone who has a website or a newsletter, anything like that, to update their privacy policy and repost it. They basically need a GDPR compliant privacy policy. And this can also, you know, you say, well, GDPR, that's only applicable in Europe. Yeah, well, the reality is that your website is probably accessed by people in Europe. So, and if it really isn't going to cost you anything but a little bit of time and effort to update your privacy policy on your website, then you might as well do it. So I found this really good resource. It's called freeprivacypolicy.com. And you can go there and it will present you a wizard, and you can go through that wizard to generate a privacy policy that is appropriate to your organization. So, and this isn't just about GDPR, by the way. You can also use this to do compliance with California Online Privacy Protection Act, the Google AdWords requirement for a privacy policy, and just talking about how you handle personally identifiable information in general. Maybe you do, maybe you don't, but anyways, it would help you generate a privacy policy applicable to that as well. And the Federal Trade Commission Fair Information Practices Act. So it's a pretty sweet little comprehensive resource, and I found it very easy to utilize. It generates an HTML file at the end, which, you know, you can then utilize in whatever way appropriate to then post into your website. So it is really nice in that it also generates that outcome of that privacy policy for you that is in the format that your web developer would need in order to, you know, post that. So that was a great resource, and I definitely do recommend that you check it out. It's again called freeprivacypolicy.com. That's it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you found it very instructive.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com.
Support for WGTD comes from Classic Violins, quality and tradition since 1989, featuring award-winning hand-